Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Carol Corey, and she is a psychic, and she's much involved in making predictions, and she has been quite successful, which is an area that we will discuss with her, and we shall obviously be talking about some of the events that are coming up, and see what she has to say about it. So, welcome to the program, Cal.
Hi, how is everybody?
Well, I'm very well, and you sound very well indeed. It's just past the middle of the day, so presumably you're at your highest energy point.
I'm a night owl. I was the Sierra. I live in Lake Tahoe. The Sierra got slammed with snow last night. The whole West Coast, California. So, since I'm a night owl, never do this at home, mind you. But at 1 a.m., I went out and shoveled the deck and trails for the dogs. Big mistake, because it's exercising. You come back to bed and your eyes are open like you just drank coffee because of the aerobics. Big mistake. But I didn't have to do it today. So there you go. We got a lot of snow. A lot.
You have. Yeah, sounds weird. Here in England, in the south of England, we've actually had one of the warmest days of the year so far, so it's been very pleasant, but we're told make the most of it because it's changing again, so that's typical of our weather here.
I know how to stay warm and cozy, though. I make the fire. I have a nice big fire in the fireplace and hot chocolate and chamomile tea and the cozy little critters, my companion animals, so I make the best of freezing. Shoveling.
Yeah, yeah. I think snow always looks nice as long as you're looking at it from the other side of the window.
Or on the other side of the world.
Yes. Anyway, you are a successful psychic. You told me that recently when you made your predictions, I think for 2010, against other people making similar predictions, according to the Oracle 2020 magazine, you came up with a very high percentage. To qualify for that, I mean, if you have to qualify to enter this thing in a magazine, do you have to make a certain number of predictions per year? I mean, how do they work that?
No, I think one reason why I got into this, I started off writing the book about Jim Berkland, geologist, the man who predicts earthquakes, and that came out, I wrote it in 2005, and then I realized I've known him for years, and so I knew a lot about geology, even though I flunked my class in college, but I definitely got crash courses a lot from Jim Berkland. And who used to work for the USGS, and then having a master's degree in English creative writing definitely helps because I can write. And from then on, once that book was published in 2006, I started doing articles about earth changes. Well, actually, I was doing articles about earth changes for 20 years back about animals sensing earthquakes. But then I realized back in 2006, humans can do it too, and that's how I fell into it. And the more you do it, if you are an intuitive, if you have heightened senses, the better you get at it. So then I've developed a track record where when I make a prediction, a lot of people do listen.
Yeah. So you mentioned intuition there, or being intuitive. Mm-hmm. Is that the same as being psychic?
You know, if you look up, if you Google psychic, the words all overlap. I do. I am a telephone psychic at night for an international psychic network. And sometimes when the people say, challenge me, and they go, well, you're psychic, you tell me. You know, I'll sometimes correct them and say I'm intuitive, that, you know, I have really good intuition. And for them, I use astrology and sometimes tarot cards. Those are my tools. For the earth changes, I use my knowledge of past events, historical events, my gut instinct, studying maps, studying like going to the NOAA for weather, going to the USGS maps, and then I'll get a vibe which kind of goes past what the normal person would get. Like, for instance, let's go back to the Japan crises. No way did I get did I get the great quake hit really for Japan. However, on my earthquake website, on February 27th, I did make a prediction with a fairly short window, seismic window for me. I said that Japan would get a 7.0 plus from February 27th to March 12th. I based it on, I was watching, and I did get the area exactly. I said in eastern Honshu near Tokyo. And the way I got that, I was noticing there was a swarm in that region, and it didn't feel good to me. I got bad vibes, and also I got left ear tones. It's just a physical cue that intuitives can get. Some get anxiety, headaches, whatever, but ear tones is just another one. Left ear tones, often they can mean offshore Northern California or even Japan for me. When this first hit, the 7.2, I thought, oh my God, I got... This is a major quake. Okay, but then I had no clue that it was going to go into a 7.9, an 8.8, upgraded to an 8.9, then finally upgraded to a 9.0, and then the tsunamis, and then the nuclear crisis. I never would have imagined that. I didn't even know there was nuclear reactors there, as so many other people did not know either. But also, I wanted to add, I was on another major radio show live on January 3rd, and I had sent the producer questions and answers upon their request for my forecast. And I did say, this is kind of eerie, and this was back in December because they needed them earlier, I did say for 2011, I did see 8.0s, which are great quakes, and plural, not just one, 8.0s plus tsunamis, and not just singular tsunami. And we do know that Japan had a 23-foot wave, very destructive tsunami, and Hawaii was hit by an 11-foot tsunami, and even our west coast was damaged a lot. Not as bad as the 1964 Alaska earthquake, but it was damaged. So, and I did say it would happen in the Pacific Ring of Fire. So, of course, the host brought me back on and thinks that I'm this magical guru now because, it was pretty close.
I suspect that when someone like you is successful, it's partly intuition and also another quality perhaps that you can't really name that makes you sort of stand out against anyone else. Do you not think there's sort of an ingredient somewhere there? Perhaps you're, what would people call it, being, in a manner of speaking, sort of clairvoyant?
Yes, in a sense, I call it a gift. I did, when I fell into this in 2006, going on radio and doing all the articles about doing it myself, not just Jim Berglund, I look back at my roots and I have Osage. My mother was part Osage Indian, and I found out they were a very spiritual Indian tribe. And I believe that this is genetic. I've also noticed that my little brother's intuitive as well. So, and I do call it a gift. It can be a curse because sometimes when we get, bad visions, it's scary. But I always try and help people get prepared, or for myself, get prepared and be proactive. So it's not to make it not negative, to counteract the negativity that's going to go with the prediction if it comes true. But it's a gift, and also it's connected to, I've been a writer since I was in third grade, and when I was 8 years old, my teachers noticed I had a gift for writing, and it's the same thing. When I write books and articles, I don't really sit there and think about each sentence. My fingers just start going. It's like it's just automatic, and it's the same thing with these magnitudes or quake visions or weather things. It just comes to me. I don't ask for it. It comes to me. And then, of course, yes, I'll edit it, but that's called your right brain, the creative side, the intuitive side. The left brain is when you intellectualize, you go back and edit, and use fine tools. But I think it's the same thing with my predictions as well as my creative writing, and they're both interlinked. I think it's just a gift. And I'm not the only one that has it. There's so many people around the world that have this gift.
Yeah, and I think with that, the more you use it, I guess the better you get at predicting things more accurately.
Definitely.
Now, you mentioned animals sensing earthquakes, and I've read that wild animals usually leave an area well before such a danger happens. Now, are you're presumably aware of that, but are there any other ways in which people could use the activities of animals to get an indication that there was some danger like that?
Yes, it's wild animals and domestic animals, and not all animals use their sixth sense powers. And also with the wild animals, sometimes they will flee or become absent, but sometimes they'll also do something bizarre and they'll come closer to humans, which they normally don't do. For instance, let's go back to October 30th, 2007. I got a great hit because I knew it that night when it was coming in. Alum Rock in near San Jose, California, in the Bay Area, they got a 5.6 quake. It was felt throughout Northern California and probably Nevada, too. It was a very strong jolt, the strongest we've had since 1989. Now, I knew that was coming for many reasons. One, I have three companion animals. They're all around me right now in a circle. It's eerie. I've got a black cat. No, I'm not a black witch, but I've got a black cat at my feet, and I've got two Britneys, and they're all seismically sensitive. They all were acting out a week prior. My cat was pacing and being vocal. My dogs were Velcro dogs. They would get on me. They were being clingy. It was just like, you know, what's your problem? Get off me. You know, just clinging on. And right. this was a great tip off. I live at lake level, a few blocks away from the big lake at Lake Tahoe, and we really don't get a lot of bears in our neighborhood. I've never seen one, but there was a bear that was out in my front yard, and there was a huge crowd of people, and I went out there one afternoon, I think it was a Saturday afternoon, and I said, what is going on? They go, there's a bear in your yard. And I paused, and I made my announcement to, there's probably 30 people, 25, 30 people. I said, you know what? There's going to be an earthquake either in Tahoe, and we did feel it up here, either in Tahoe or San Francisco Bay Area within the next week. And 5 days later, sure enough, that quake rolled in at night. And so wild animals, people should just be observant. Wild animals, if they act strangely, you know, if there's no birds or if birds come closer to you when they normally don't, if your own domestic animals act out, or you could even, there's even in the States, if you go to phytofinder.com or tabbytracker.com, you could actually type in your zip code, any state, and it'll tell you how many reported missing dogs and missing cats there are within a 10, 15, 50, or 100 or 150 mile radius from where you live. And I use that often for San Francisco. It's a good tool. It really is. Because if you do it maybe, you know, twice a month, and if the animals, the lost and found animals spike, there definitely could be a quake or something coming on, some anomaly, for sure.
Right. Now, you did mention to me something about a California superstorm. So since you're talking about California, what is all that about?
Well, it's kind of funny. Well, it's not funny, because it's in the January 2011 forecast, and let's look at the weather events. I wrote in the article, the Earth Changes article that I do for Oracle 2020 magazine, online and hard copy. I said, as earthquakes continue to shake the planet, thanks to La Nina, a cooling of surface waters of the Pacific Ocean affecting weather, winter storms and flooding may pound the entire West Coast. The Northeast and Midwest will not be immune. And then, that's spot on. But then on my earthquake website, I went further. And in January, when, you know, we did have a power outage late December. We were 3 days without power in the Sierra, and most of California was getting flooding. So it was a nasty storm. But a lot of people thought that was it. Even my brother, who lives in the back house, he kept saying, are we going to have more snow? And I kept saying, yeah, definitely. I knew this would happen. And now they're calling it a miracle March, which goes back in history. Sierra got slammed this past week and last night, and we have another storm coming. Santa Cruz Mountains outside of the Bay Area where I used to live. They evacuated almost 300 people last night because of the flood levels of the San Lorenzo River that runs through that region off of Highway 9. Santa Barbara this past week, there was evacuation, major flooding. Big Sur, chunks of Big Sur were falling into the Pacific Ocean. Go up to Petrolia, offshore Northern California, flood advisories, flooding, and it's not over by a long shot. We have so much snow here in the Sierra. Where is it all going to go when the temperatures rise? And they will. Where will it go? We are going to see flooding for sure. And it's not just this year. It's happened historically before. But it's definitely happening now again. And as being a native Californian, I've been there, done that, but never in the Sierra. So... Oh, also in the Tahoe Tribune, last week they showed 1.3 miles away from my home, a house was flooded up to, I don't know, like 3 feet flooded, just a mile away from my home. And that's pretty scary because there's a lot of ponding on our street. You know, it's a semi-rural street that I live on. So we have that to look forward to. You should see the berms outside of my house. You can't even see the neighbors. I mean, it's high. I like that, but it's high. It really is. And this is just lake level. They closed the ski resorts today because of avalanche. It's a level from 1 to 5, and it's at 4 of avalanche probability. So this isn't just a little storm. This is really, this is big. It's big.
So are you saying that this particular spell of weather is abnormal? Although you normally get floods and snow, this is much more.
No. Like I said, it happened in 82 in Santa Cruz Mountains. I moved there in 83 and 82. It was really bad. I remember looking at the San Jose Mercury newspaper and seeing photos of people that lived up in the Santa Cruz Mountains in canoes, literally in canoes, just going from house to house to get from point A to point B. And that it's kind of funny, but not really. When my brother was asking me back in the fall, should we buy a snowblower this time around or should we buy a snowblower? I said, no, get a canoe. And he calls me Traj because I'm kind of like, you know, all gloom and doom. And he didn't believe me. But that canoe may come in handy in the months to come, April, May, because, again, where is all the snow going to go? You know, I was told, a week or two ago that our lake level is 58% higher than it should be. I'm not saying we're going to be flooded from the lake, but people that live near rivers and you know, streets that are prone to ponding, the rest of Northern California, coastal areas, definitely, there is going to be flooding.
Mm. Right. Well, as we're with your 2011 predictions, can we continue with that? What do you see in the immediate future?
Well, the earthquakes, this is fascinating. Now, we just had a supermoon on the 19th that I think everybody knows about. Now, Jim Berglund, of course, I respect him dearly. But we have been competitors. You know, we had two California earthquake wagers, and I won both. I did a 5.0 for California. He said Southern California. I said Northern. I even pinned the epicenter, and I was right. And then for the 6.0, I got my quake again, January 9th last year, 6.5 offshore Northern California. So I won $100, and I won the big geologist. Well, he has been on the news huge. I mean, huge the past 2 weeks. You name it, he's been on it. Fox TV News. Newsmax, just Google it and you'll see it. He has made a prediction that the West Coast, California in particular, will get a massive quake between the 19th of this month and the 26th. Well, time's running out. We have 1.5 days left to go. Now, it's kind of bizarre in some of these interviews. It gets a little bit confusing. I'm not sure if he really includes Alaska, but if Alaska does get hit in the next day and a half, I have to say he would get credit. But he was focusing on California for a lot of different reasons. But definitely it was his seismic window, the full moon, high tides, erratic tides, and the super moon. But so far nothing's happened. Now, I remember years ago he told me, great quakes don't happen when there's a lot of snow or a lot of rain. It happens after. So it's kind of like I feel I rained on his parade. Because of this superstorm in California, I do think that his prediction is going to fizzle. Not to say that California will not get its quake. It probably will. We probably will get a major quake, 7.0, or a very strong quake, you know, 6.5, 6.8. In regions like San Francisco Bay Area, offshore Northern California, Southern California, that even Bakersfield, that could follow definitely April, May, June. Those are definitely shaky months historically. So he just may get his quake, but not in the tight window that he had. And also I want to say that Alaska, I was getting the vibes today and last night, Alaska definitely could get a 7.0 plus. What's a tsunami warning? Even a tsunami. Alaska is definitely overdue, and I did include that. I looked at that before he went on air. I did include that to that show I told you as I was on January 3rd, where the host thinks that I'm, you know, very accurate. I did say Alaska could be one of the places that would get an 8.0 and tsunamis. So it's very, very likely. And there have been some quakes just today, I was noticing, near Anchorage and the Aleutian Islands, and that's where I would pinpoint it. And they are overdue. I said it would happen last year, a 7.0 plus. It was downgraded. I believe it was a 6.9. It was downgraded to a 6.6 in the Aleutian Islands. So they are extremely overdue. It's in the Pacific Ring of Fire. They've had quakes before. It would be very eerie for it to happen, though, right now, since back in 1964, we had the great quake 9.2 in Alaska on March 27th. So I don't know if it would happen right on that day. It just, I think Mother Nature is a little bit trickier than that.
Right. So far, it sounds as though you've been quite successful. Can you still look ahead a bit further now, beyond what the events you've just described? I mean, mid-year, third part of the year?
Well, Tahoe, you know, we're very, very overdue. And back in April 2008, that was another hit I had. I knew that quake was coming that night. April 25th, 2008, we had an aggressive swarm near Reno, 50 miles east of me. And we had thousands of quakes. We had scientists from all over the world trying to figure out what was going on. It was on an unknown fault. To this day, we still don't know what was going on, but it died out. There is a geothermal plant there, and they were adding a few more, and some people thought that could have caused it because they were extremely shallow quakes. But it ended up to having a 5.0. Now, again, that was April 25th. I definitely feel that Lake Tahoe, Reno region is overdue. We have had 7.0s before, not since I've lived here. 6.0s, definitely. Mammoth Lake, south of me, they had a rash. Oh, my God. They had a rash of 6.0s, four of them, between May 24th and May 27th back in 1980. And even the USGS, now they're very conservative. They don't believe in prediction. They believe in long-term forecasting. But they actually had everybody on high alert, and it backfired because, guess what, that swarm and 6.0s are strong, especially in a volcanic region. It fizzled. It fizzled out. And nothing happened. All it did was real estate plummeted, and, the USGS said they weren't going to predict anymore. But Mammoth Lakes is definitely overdue. All this used to be volcanoes, and most of it's, you know, dormant right now. But who's to say it couldn't come alive again? I'm not saying it will, but I'm saying we are in an earthquake-prone region, without a doubt. I don't like the fact that I'm so close to the lake. it could cause a seiche. It's like a tsunami that could slosh back and forth, back and forth. They believe it did happen hundreds of years ago. Who's to say it won't happen again, especially if we got a strong quake like a 7.0. But I have my companion animals, and definitely they're good for the immediate region, you know, so I'll have a heads up. I just don't know which way to go away from the lake. I'm confused. I have a poor sense of direction. I really do. I have to figure that one out, which way to go. You know, you have to head for higher ground. But I don't know. I'm like a disoriented homing pigeon. I have terrible sense of direction. I'm going to ask my brother today, what way do I go if we get an earthquake? Because the rule of thumb is, you know, if you experience a strong, strong quake wherever you are in the world, you head for higher ground and fast. You don't just sit there and ponder, gee, which way do I go? Ask your brother and find out now so you'll know if it ever happens to you.
Right. Now, the big one must bring the biggest question. What about the San Andreas Fault?
You know, of course, it's big, and USGS, they did earthquake drill last year for a possible one that could happen down Southern California by Palm Springs, a 7.8, and they used models to see what would happen. It's by the Salton Sea. Definitely that could happen there. I don't think about the San Andreas as much as I think about the Hayward Fault Line, which is in the East Bay. Both it could happen. Or the Calaveras, where San Jose is. You know, they're all interlinked, and they could actually trigger a double quake. I mean, if we had a Hayward, if we had, let's say, hypothetically, a 7.0 on the Hayward Fault Line, it could cause massive destruction in the East Bay and the whole San Francisco Bay Area. But it also could trigger another quake on the San Andreas, which is, 400 miles? It runs north and south throughout our Golden State. But in my mind, I think more about the Hayward Fault. And there's also the Rogers Creek Fault. Berkland believes that one is, you know, very, very ripe. The USGS actually has percentages of which one is more vulnerable and more prone to create our next quake, the big one. And again, the big one is an 8.0 or stronger. When we had the 7.1, the World Series quake in 1989, October 17th, that was huge. I thought the world was going to end, and it was only 15 seconds, but it seemed like it lasted for eternity. It was the strongest quake I've ever been in, and when I had an earthquake headache at the time, which I didn't know what it was, I just thought it was a migraine right between your eyes, I went to bed, and it was an Indian summer day, and when that quake hit, I tried to make it toward the doorway, which really, in California, you shouldn't do. You should just go under a table. It's safer and get away from glass windows. But you know, when that happens, you don't think. It's, you know, you're in fight-or-flight mode and survival instinct, and you flee, just like animals. So I tried to make it to the front door, but the wood floors that were in my bungalow, they were literally buckling. I mean, they're like waves. It was so frightening. And, oh, my God, the sound. It's like a freight train was running through the house and the windows. I ended up falling in the dining room. I grabbed my yellow retriever at the time, Labrador retriever. The cats took care of themselves. I grabbed my dog, and we fell in the dining room. And it was really, I was lucky. I cut my leg, but there was glass, French windows all above me, and then the two French doors trying to get toward the front door. But by the time I made it to the front door, guess what? The quake was over. And then we had a strong aftershock 45 minutes later. But that was scary. That's probably one reason why I do what I do, why I have a preparedness earthquake website. And most people that go on to it or that are earthquake sensitive, they also have experienced a very traumatic earthquake. And then it gets you into it because you want to be ready for the next one. You want to be prepared.
Now, we had a small quake in England just a few months ago.
Right.
Did you get some feeling about that?
No, I wasn't connected to it. And if I'm not connected to a region,
What did you think about? What do you think about us getting earthquakes in the UK? I mean, I know they're relatively small by your standards, but I think the number of quakes is increasing.
Right. It was widely felt, and I did see it on the map. And it doesn't surprise me at all, because in that article that I wrote that I sent you that was published, I did say that earthquakes may hit on hidden fault lines or in non-seismically active areas. And so it probably surprised a lot of you, because you're not known to getting a lot of quakes there. Not like California, Nevada, Alaska, the Pacific Ring of Fire. You know, it's like a horseshoe if you go to the Pacific Ocean. You know, it covers so much ground, no pun intended, but it just, you know, New Zealand, Chile, South America, just all the way up, you know, all the way up to Northern America, Alaska, and then the Asian area. And you just don't think of you with quakes. You're lucky. You're not really in a seismically active area. I can't see people going out and buying the Man Who Predicts Earthquakes book in your region. No. It's just not, you know, it's like South Korea. My vinegar book, The Healing Powers of Vinegar, was the best-selling health book for a long time in South Korea, but why would they buy the quake book, you know? If you don't have quakes, why would you be interested?
Exactly. Now, I believe you've got your own ideas about all these peculiar instances of the dead fish and the birds that have been in the news lately. What do you think is behind that?
It's funny you mention that. I have the cover story on Oracle 2020 that debuts April 1st on the New Madrid Zone. Now, the Midwest, the New Madrid Zone, had two great quakes back in 1811 and 1812. They actually, and these are great quakes, 8.0, but the areas weren't as populated as they are now. There are seven states that the New Madrid Zone covers in the Midwest, Middle America. But there was a swarm that started back in September, more than, 500 quakes by December. 500 quakes, mind you, shallow, in Guy, Arkansas. Scientists call it the Guy Swarm. And I said that for 2011, Arkansas and Missouri may experience more and stronger shakers than they did in 2010. And it'll be felt in several states. Well, Cali got another hit. Sure enough, February 28th this year, they got a 4.7. Now, that might not sound like a very strong quake, but it's kind of like your quake. The bedrock's different than here in California. So 17 states reported to the USGS that they felt that 4.7. Now, a lot of people in the Midwest and the South states there, they're blaming it on the fracking, where they're trying to get natural gas from the ground, kind of like our drilling I was talking about in the Reno area, the geothermal plant. I don't know if that's causing it, the gases, all those birds that were dropping out of the sky right on New Year's Eve. Nobody really knows why that was happening. You heard about that? More than 5,000 blackbirds mysteriously just dropped dead, right? Yes. In Beebe, Arkansas. How weird and surreal is that? I mean, that's like a Stephen King movie or something. Yes. I mean, it would make a great, you know, chilling, chiller, thriller movie, but it's real life. Some people, some scientists said, well, it's the fireworks. I don't believe it. Then I think the way they left it, the birds were traumatized, and they just died. It was just a mysterious die-off. And then at the same time, there was the mass die-off of fish right in the same area. So, but nobody really came up with an answer, no answer. Then what happened, one reason why Jim Berkland, Simon Winchester, another very popular science writer, and myself, a few weeks ago, we were all doing media interviews the same day saying that California, the West Coast, could be next. Berkland and I both were pointing to the mass die-off of fish in Redondo Beach in Southern California, also in British Columbia. Something's going on. It's really, really bizarre. I do mention this in my article about unsolved mysteries of the New Madrid Zone, and nobody knows why. But Berkland does know, and I do know, that often when we have beached whales, right, you know, soon after, a quake will happen, and usually it's a major quake. And so that's one reason why he did go to the media saying that there's going to be a massive quake in California within a seismic window, because it was a tip-off, because the wildlife was acting differently than they usually do.
Mm. There is a school of thought which rather appeals to me, that the beach whales and dolphins have some system of guiding which uses electromagnetic energies.
Right.
And when these are disturbed, they find themselves following their normal instinct, if you like to call it that. And this is why they end up on beaches, because their device, if you like, that they are guided by is all sort of all gone to pieces.
Exactly. Berglund has taught me that there's magnetite, a mineral, in animals and people. And when there's earth changes in the magnetic field, animals and people, yes. I even have it in the book, The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes, they get disoriented. And that's what happens, and they act out and get disoriented. And I'm wondering, I'm doing the copy edits on The Healing Powers of Honey right now, and I have a whole chapter about colony collapse disorder, about the mass die-off of honeybees, which is very detrimental, because we use honeybees to pollinate one-third of the food that we eat around the world. And during my research, I talked to a lot of beekeepers that have lost half of their colonies. A colony is one beehive, which could actually produce 50 pounds of honey per year, which is a lot. And I've talked to some beekeepers that have lost more than 50% of their hives. It's really awful. And I was thinking, if I didn't put it in the book, I have to add it today, that it could be that maybe the magnetic field is making them disoriented. Because what happens, the beekeepers, their bees die off, or they'll just disappear. They'll go AWOL, and they're just gone. And I talked to a lot of scientists on the East Coast and West Coast, some at UC Davis, and they still don't know why the bees are dying off. Some are saying that it's the pesticides. Some are saying that it's a virus, that they don't know what it is. Some are saying that, it's the antibiotics the beekeepers are using. Some are saying cell phone radiation, parasites. However, this is really fascinating. A visionary friend of mine in Canada emailed me some good news for Britain's beekeepers. Are you ready for this? Their harvest, yes. Their harvest is doing great this year, 2 times better than before, and they're saying it's due to the cold winter and the warm spring. And you mentioned earlier, it's a warm day. And they're saying that, it's because there was probably, because of the cold winter you had, that it kept some of the parasites away. I find that fascinating and really upbeat, and I'm going to add that to the book today, because I don't want it to have all, hey, everyone, the bees are going to be dead. There's no more honey. I have to let people know there's still going to be honey. But go ahead.
Well, that's quite an interesting point you've made about the parasites, because that has been put forward as the cause. And if you now find a reason why suddenly we're getting a good response from the bees, in other words, something's changed, and you can put it down to the cold weather killing off the parasites, that's a reasonable conclusion, isn't it?
It makes sense. And then, of course, my editor wanted me to add about the BP Gulf spill, and I'm wondering if that affected the fish. One would think that it did. I mean, the Gulf spill, all that chemicals going into the water. Also, I was thinking just the other day, maybe Berglund and I were off about the mass die-off of the fish in Redondo Beach in B.C., maybe because that happened right before the Japan quakes, and maybe they were sensing the change in the Earth's magnetic fields, and, they died from that. Nobody else knows why they died, and it is pretty strange how we did have that great quake, soon after. It just, maybe it wasn't tied to the West Coast at all.
Yes. I mentioned about dolphins, which seem to be extremely intelligent. this might sound an odd question, but have you ever swam with dolphins?
No, I love to swim. I'm a really good swimmer. I think that would be the most awesome experience. I've seen movies where people do. I think. Have you? Have you? Did you say you've swam with them?
No, I haven't. I'd love to, though. I really
right,
would. Yeah.
Right. And they are highly intelligent. Correct.
I was thinking to myself that people like yourself with a high level of intuition, it would be interesting to know what reaction you felt was between you and the dolphin if you swam with them.
Right. That's a nice image. That would be interesting. Now I'm getting images of they'll hook us up like ET and do studies on our brains. I don't think I would like that. Or my seismically sensitive critters. You know, you've heard that saying, that cliche or saying, birds of a feather flock together.
Yes.
I did say earlier that I believe that being intuitive is genetic, because I've noticed my brother, he's lived behind me for more than a decade, and at first he made fun of my predictions, but he hears me scream too much, because when I get something accurate, I scream out of excitement, because not because I'm happy that people are hurt or devastation happens. By no means, that's not it. It's just that it's an amazing feeling to know that you have a craft and you're fine-tuning it and you can do this. It's just awesome. And he's cast my checks from the psychic network, and he sees how they're getting bigger and bigger in amount. He's seen me make predictions for him that come true. And like you said earlier, the more you do it, the better you get at it. It's just,
yes.
for the psychic network, people call me, and last night this girl called me. She wasn't a regular, first time. She's blown away. I was blown away that I knew all this stuff about her. I knew within 2 minutes her age, her sun sign, where the region she came from, that she was in school, what her major was, and what her problem was. It just comes to me, and we get a psychic connection where we both will say, she'll go, oh my God, I feel bumps, goosebumps all over my body. And then I'll say, I do too. And I believe it's a psychic connection. And it's the people that call me and treat me nice and don't treat me like, okay, psychic, what color's my hair? If they, if they come off with something superficial, it's like I see a TV screen and it's going to go fuzzy. And they will not get a good reading. But if they come to me and they're genuine, they will get a reading that they'll be happy with. And again, the more you do it, just the better you get.
So you would actually invite people to phone you if they wanted a reading in respect of, say, a problem they had?
Well, I do, but I work for a network, and I kind of like that privacy, because I get all types of calls, all types. I mean, you can imagine, from domestic abuse to illegal activities and everything. And I sort of don't want people to know where I live and to broadcast it. I love working for a network because they just patch me in. And that, I'm wondering if some of the callers think that they, tell us everything really quick, like, electronically, this person, was born this day and lives in this region, but they don't. All I see on my caller ID is, it's the psychic network. That's it. So I like working for a network because I don't have to do any advertising. I just log on and the phone rings. How easy is that?
Yes, lovely.
It
now,
is.
The program is shooting on like mad here. We haven't got too long left, and I would like you to give us a little insight into the contents of your book, your forthcoming book, which I believe it still is, unless it's just come out, The Healing Powers of Honey. Tell us all a little bit about how we can use honey.
Oh, God, let's not even talk that. I talk about honey. I've got more good news about the Healing Power series, though. The honey, the reason why I say that is because I have 400 pages in front of me with little post-it notes from the copy editor. Are you sure you want this word? Are you sure you want this? I have so many copy edits to do.
Yes.
So I'm going to put the honey book on the back burner, but I will tell you, I'm going to have advanced copies in August, and it will be available to everyone October. It'll be online, bookstores everywhere around the world, And I got the new book deal. Are you ready for this? The Healing Powers of Coffee. How cool is that? So right when this book flies back to New York on the 31st this month, I'm going right back to the Healing Powers of Coffee for my research on that. And that will be released right before the world ends in 2012. It'll be released September of 2012. And then on December 21st, they say the world will be gone. I'm only joking. I don't believe on the 21st of December we will go. I believe that we're going to have more challenges before then, but I don't believe that it's going to be the end of the world. And on my bank card, it says 2013. So I'm going to go with Wells Fargo.
Well, I'm one of those that certainly believe there is a key moment in our evolution, and it will be affected on the 21st of December 2012, but certainly not as some people take it literally as the end of the world. I see it only as a jump up in our evolution, which still carries on for years to come. So
you believe something will happen that day, definitely?
Yes, well, it's put down to an alignment of our sun with the central sun of our galaxy, and there's supposed to be an alignment, and the energy that's coming to the Earth is so powerful that it will raise our consciousness levels.
I know, but then I start going back to Jupiter effect. I bought the book. I bought the whole concept of the planets aligning back in 1982. Nothing happened. And then Y2K. Oh my God, Y2K. I will remember that. 1999. Yes. I stuffed my pantry. My brother, he would give to all the neighbors. I can't believe he did this. He would have all the neighbors around the block come and see Callie's pantry. Look how. I mean, that was stupid. And look how well stocked she is. Can you believe it? I called all my editors. Please pay me now. Please pay me now. The world's going down. I called my best friend, Fairy Codmother. I was starving back in those days. And I asked her for a manual typewriter. I had to keep writing. My editors called me in 2000 that month and said in January and said, "Hey, Cal, how you doing? How you doing?" I was so embarrassed. That night on New Year's Eve, I really thought Y2K, it was over. I went to bed early with the animals in the waterbed, hippie girl. I turned on the TV, and I literally thought that I would watch each country go down. Nothing happened. Nothing major happened. I made a vow to myself I would never fall into something like that again. So with this December 21st thing, I don't know. I don't see myself jumping on some big ark. I couldn't afford it anyway, like in that movie 2012, Only the Rich. And I'm over 50, so they wouldn't take me. I'm useless. So I don't know. I'm taking a fatalistic approach. You know, if it's really going to happen on the 21st, if it's all going to be over, then be it. But I really believe some really challenging times are going to happen before. You know, like this Japan crisis, I think we're going to see more things like that. Like right now, I'm looking on CNN, if Japan's new crisis happened here, could U.S. officials handle it? You know, and we've got two nuclear reactors right on the coast of California. We've got one, in San Luis Obispo, and then that's north of Southern California, and then we've got one between Los Angeles and San Diego. Could we get a tsunami down there? Yeah, they've got the signs down there. When I was on book signings 3 years ago, I saw these signs input, you know, on the coast. I just believe that, I don't know, live each day as though it's your last. You never know. I'm not saying it's the end of the world, but I'm saying more challenges are definitely coming our way this year, as well as 2012. But I don't think the 21st of December, in my opinion, is going to be much different than any other day. But I do believe that maybe a month before then, or a couple months before then, we may see things. And people will really get panicky, thinking, oh, my God, you know, they said, And that could even cause, you know, when we panic, that causes chaos and craziness. You see what happens.
Well, indeed, I think we will know more about it as the months tick by, and that's the beauty of it. I don't think if it is a major happening in our lives that it will be unknown by any means. Now, we are getting into the last few minutes of the programme, Cal, because we've had such a good time here, we haven't really noticed it passing by so quickly. Now, we haven't mentioned your website, which people might like to visit, so perhaps you would give
Great.
That out.
Okay, it's just Cal, like California, CalOrey.com. And I have an earthquake website. It's Earthquake Epicenter. Just go on the homepage below the chocolate book, and you'll see an Earthquake Epicenter website. Click on that link, and it'll take you right there. It's forums. It's free to register, and you can register from anywhere around the world, and you can join in with the discussions, or you don't even have to register. You could just look at what we're talking about. There's about 100 of us, and there's people from Greece, California, the Midwest, you name it, and we'd love to have you. It takes like 2 seconds to register, and you're on. You can say whatever you want. So there you go.
And all that information is on the website that you just gave us the address of.
Yeah, you'll find it right under, there's 3 books of the Healing Power series, and it's right underneath the chocolate book, Earthquake Epicenter link to join the forum. And you could email me. It's right underneath my picture. It's like Ask the Intuitive. I'm really good. When people email me a question about anything, I email them back.
Okay. So you don't mind your email address being given out then?
Well, no, because they just click it on, ask the Intuitive, and so they just click. And then I guess they don't even know my email address. It just comes automatically to me.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Right, I'm just looking down my notes here. Oh, yes, there's this one other thing. People have heard that you've written this book about the healing value of vinegar, they might in that.
Right.
So would I be correct to assume the details again are on your website?
Right. It's the healing. I actually tagged myself as the Healing Powers author. I thought it was just going to end up to be with the vinegar book, but then it turned out to be a trilogy, and then my editor corrected me and said, no, it's a series. And I thought, oh my God, a series. And now we're on the fifth one. And they've been translated in 20 languages around the world. How about that?
Brilliant.
Yes.
Okay, Cal, I'm going to have to say goodbye to you now. And thank you very much for coming onto the program. It's been terrifically interesting.
Thank you.
And long may you continue to get accurate forecasts.
Yes, take care. Be prepared no matter where you live. Okay?
Thank you very much, Cal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right, friends, that was very interesting. I'll tell you quickly that my guest next week will be Maggie Whitehouse. She's the author of a book called The Miracle Man, and she is also an ordained minister, lecturer, who teaches Kabbalah and the spiritual laws of prosperity, helping people to bridge the gap between the New Age beliefs and what she calls the sometimes ingrained religious beliefs of our upbringing. So thank you for being with me today. I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.